Remind all participants, today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's PEDNR call on Tuesday, the 11th of January, we have Alan Greenberg, James Bladel, Michaela Nalon, Siva Mutasami, Ted Suzuki, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Barry Cobb, Ron Wickersham, Mike O'Connor, Mason Cole, Paul Diaz. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Margie Milam, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Apologies this evening noted for Jeff Eckhouse and Ollie Hope. So can please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you very much, Gisela. I see there's a message from Paul saying he has to leave at about 3 o'clock. And I was going to do the... Try to get easy ones done first in terms of going over the unresolved issues, but given that Paul has to leave, I think we're going to start in the difficult one, and somehow we'll have to get off of it and go back to other ones as we go along, if that's okay with everyone. Current situation, and the difficult one, of course, is the number of days of guaranteed renewal, and going along with that, there seems to have re-risen out of the ashes a discussion on whether the domains should go dark, being our euphemism for redirected and or disabled. That item had been generally agreed upon earlier, but I gather as a result of discussions that happened perhaps in Cartagena, there's a strong feeling among some registrars, and that includes Michael Young for the affiliates, and that the going dark is something that we cannot support, that they cannot support at this point. On the other hand, a number of us are really concerned that without an out-of-band indication like that, this whole thing is just too subject to gaming. So let's start that discussion. James, you have your hand up.
Yes.
If I misrepresented any position, please call me on it.
I don't think it was a misrepresentation, Alan, but I do think there's a subtlety that was missed, which is that I think that a lot of registrars agree that going dark is, you know, probably a good practice. It is a good option, but there are so many unanticipated possible scenarios where requiring or mandating that a website go dark could cause problems that... I think that, you know, gives pause, at least to myself, that it's not something I would like to see required, because I think that we're looking for some discretion here. That's all.
Okay. And Barry?
Thank you, Alan. It's Barry. I guess with respect to going dark or not, I'm a business continuity guy, and, I certainly know whether I'm a small, medium, or big business, I wouldn't want that to happen to me either. And so I guess, you know, it's really not a question of dark or no dark. Eventually, through this process, it's going to go dark one way or another. It's just really a question of when, at least for the current registrant that owns that domain. But at the same time, our existing methods to communicate to the registrant that they're about to expire or have expired, et cetera, don't seem to work as clearly as we would like them to. So the only other thing that I can think of to propose, and perhaps this is technically feasible, maybe it's not, but I know that it's already a part of the process in general with registrars that the moment the domain expires, or at some point in their process, they do swap the name servers, and it either becomes a parked page or a page that says the domain is expired or something along those lines. At some point, the registrar made the threshold decision, we're going to make that domain go dark. Again, going back to that, this is really a question of when, not a question of if. So... is it technically feasible that at some point along that process, when there is a swap in name servers for an expired domain, is it possible that instead of just a normal name server that sets up a splash screen or a parked page, that there's kind of what I will use a non-technical term, kind of like a pass-through name server. And what I mean by that is that as the traffic comes through port 80 to accessexample.com, because the domain is expired and it's already routed to a different name server, that there's some sort of splash screen that pops up that just says, this domain is expired, you will be directed to the production domain in 10 seconds or 30 seconds or whatever. And so that within this pass-through name server of sorts, it somehow keeps track of where the production domain is so that we don't. So I see hands are raising. You get the idea. I'll move on. Thank you.
Okay, Barry, before we let you off the hook, how would you implement this for the non-Port 80 services?
Barry, I haven't thought that through 100%. I'm at least wanting, you know, right now we're focusing mostly on the website itself. So let's start there and we can see about the other services. I'm not even sure if this is technically feasible, but, you know, maybe it does satisfy both worlds.
It is technically feasible whether it's practical or not. I'll let the other people speak. McKaylee.
It's not technically feasible.
It is?
No.
Not technically feasible. Okay.
No. For the very simple reason that you have no way of knowing what host name the actual website, in inverted commas, lives on. You have no way of knowing that. If the name, if Barry were to register a domain with us and then use a third party's name servers, we would have zero visibility on what A records or C names or any other range of DNS records existed for that domain name. And basically, unless you rewrote the entire DNS protocols, there's no way that you could do it.
May I counter? That even applies for web traffic. Forget about the other ports, but at least
Barry, any traffic, because I have no way of knowing with 100% certitude which records are active, which records are actually being used, or how they're being used. I have no way of knowing that. I have no visibility. It's not using my name servers.
Oh, okay, Alan, if I may ask this a different way then. For Black Knight, at some point along the process of managing a domain, that it does expire and that there is an active website behind it, whether you host it or not, and whether at some point in time in your process there's a name server change on an expired domain, yes?
Yeah.
Okay, so what is the criteria by which that event happens that you as Black Knight are taking that action on an expired domain, and when that happens, that traffic is still somehow rerouted to whatever name server you put in that field?
No, it's not.
Correct.
You're not understanding how DNS works. Because the thing is, you're making an assumption that www.domain.tld exists and is used, and that web traffic on port 80 is being directed there. You can't make that assumption. This is the fundamental problem. You can't make that. You cannot know that that is actually happening. So the only way that you could technically capture all of the port 80 traffic would be if you were to, this is just purely theoretical, if you were to change the name servers and create a wildcard A record, wildcard the domain, then you'd be able to capture all the port 80 traffic on that domain. But, you know, that's about the only way you could do it. But there's no way for you to know where the traffic was going originally if it's not using your name server. Like, if I don't control the name servers throughout, I've no way of knowing. And even technically speaking, I've no actual way really of knowing which A record or C name or whatever is the one that the previous registrant was actually using.
Okay, so Michele, if I can summarize, clearly we can intercept traffic, registrars do that all the time, but you're saying you cannot redirect it back to the original site after the splash screen because you don't know enough about where that would have gone if the domain, if the root zone entry had stayed the same.
Basically, yeah. The problem with this, Alan, is that technically, if the world were very simple and only one type of DNS record existed, and people only created one A record or a domain, then it would be, you know, technically possible, I suppose, to do various different things. But the reality is that if I were to be forced on the contract to assure anything like that, I can just see myself in a world of pain.
Okay, no, but I'm just trying to clarify. The problem is not intercepting. Clearly, we do that all the time. The problem is once it's no longer the root zone entry for this particular domain, routing the traffic there is the problem.
Yeah, well, I'll put it this way. I'm trying to think of a simpler way of putting this. Let's say, for example, in a real world type scenario, you know, post offices offer services where you redirect mail from one house to another. So, in that case, you are declaring and making known where it was, where you were originally, and where you were going to. So, in that kind of scenario, in other words, the single A record type scenario, then that's fine. In this scenario, it's more like, stupidly kind of silly analogy. Imagine the flooding in Australia floods the entire continent of Australia. So all the Australians are uprooted and scattered to the four corners of the globe. You've no way of knowing where the hell they were in Australia originally.
No, I think we get it. Since we're very limited time, I want to go on to the other speakers right now and give them a chance. Ron had his hand down but gave up, and James has his hand up.
Yeah, I'll just be brief. Barry, I think that there are a lot of good ideas of what could be done, but I think that what we're saying is in all cases we're talking about 80, 90, 95% of scenarios. As long as there's going to be those outliers, I think that we need discretion in this area, and therefore I'm against consensus policy. Thanks.
Ron, did you want to get in again or not? No, I guess not. The original proposal that I had made was that we set a policy but have an exception process. That is, a registrar could say, my business model doesn't meet this. I will have another way of making sure that the registrant has an opportunity to renew, or at least, you know, that they will be taken care of. And that would allow registrars the discretion to handle completely different business models or scenarios, where the customer is so good they're never going to kill the domain no matter what, how much the money they don't pay. To what extent is there a belief now that that cannot work at all? Because that was proposed for exactly the kind of scenario we're talking about. I'll ask the question. I'll let people answer in their own time. Ron, you have your hand up now.
Yes. Yes, I'm in support of the general way of having a policy with exceptions that are more generous, that the registrar can extend courtesies, but complies with the minimum standards. I think this was the point of earlier in the process where we had suggestions of minimums rather than outlining absolute numbers. But my mute button was working wrong. I'll go back to Michele's thing. It is possible on simple web pages through DNS, the The registrar certainly knows the name server that registrant normally had been using before the domain expired. So you could have the splash page come up, and then the redirect automatically delivers that address to the web page. The difficulty, so you get the first initial transaction. The difficulty comes that every element, and with current web design, you may have 40 elements on the home page, some even many times more than that. So that delay and splash would happen for every one of those. So it wouldn't be a successful thing, but we certainly know we can certainly supply the same address because the name server didn't go dark. It's an IP address. It's no longer referred to by the record in the root servers, but it still exists.
But of course, there's a real problem that for web servers that host multiple websites, they rely on the name being the correct one to recognize which of the multiple websites have that IP address to go to.
Yes, so the redirect, you know what came into your web server because you received it for your splash page. You're, you know, clearly through something like Apache, it informs you what the incoming request is. So it would take some effort, but technically I believe it's possible. I just think that on modern web pages with many elements, it wouldn't be transparent with a single splash,
yeah,
and then it works. Yeah.
I don't think we on this call anyway can host the battle of the experts on it. It's possible, it's not possible. Certainly it's an idea which has been tossed out a number of times, and it may be one which, if we decide is the one we want to pursue, understand the dynamics a little bit more. But at this point, given we only have a few more minutes, I'd like to try to understand what other alternatives we may have that address the given problem. And I'll toss one out that addresses Barry's comment on it's not a question of whether it goes dark, it's just when it does. And again, go dark is the euphemism for a redirect or something. And, what if the policy, number one, allowed exceptions for real edge cases, but I think we could cover most of the exceptions with a policy which said something like the domain must be renewable for at least 10 days, that notwithstanding, it must be renewable for at least 8 days after going dark, which says a registrar that chooses to make it go dark on day one or two can delete in 10 days. A registrar that wants to provide their customer with another month of service free while they try other mechanisms of waking them up would have to guarantee at least 38 days, all of which, of course, all always allowing deletions. Would that address some of these concerns? That is, we cover most of the special cases using that level of policy and then the exception process for the real edge cases. Ron?
Right. It bothers... I agree with the concept, part of the concept. The aspect that the registrar can pursue any edge cases by any policy that they choose, so long as the going dark is when they finally give up with whatever attention they're giving to attract the registrant to renew. Should they abandon that, even if it's years later, then make the domain go dark. But I feel strongly that 8 days is not sufficient time. I believe that 30 days is a reasonable
You're saying 30 days after it goes dark.
After it goes dark. And the registrar is free to use whatever business practices or things, including renewing the domain for 3 years without any contact to the registrant. You know, whatever makes sense for their business model. It's what happens while the registrant is still in control and still able to exercise their position. I'm troubled by small amounts of time at which it goes to an auction, at which time it goes to no defined thing of what the charges are going to be. You know, that the charges may be based on the auction prices, et cetera. So, I think I've said enough for that. Thanks.
Anyone else who wants in at this point? We seem to be at close to an impasse. I guess I'm curious about comments on what I had just proposed and how much that addresses the concerns of the registrars. Barry? Are you there, Barry?
I'm sorry, I was mute button problem. Based on what Ron was saying, have we moved on to the discussion about the number of days for this initial grace period? Is that what we're really chatting?
Well, without any methodology at all, I'm not sure that it's worth going to the specific number of days at this point. But yes, if no one else wants to speak, go right ahead.
Okay, so I guess I have a question, and you know, certainly there was a little bit of chatter on the list yesterday about this. Mikey had mentioned in his response about the number of days. Am I coming in clear, or is there an echo?
You've got a little bit of static and echo, but go ahead. We're understandable, I think.
Okay. So, per Mikey's email, we chatted a little bit last week, and I left last week's call kind of feeling like I had missed something. And so I finally, after talking with Mikey, I finally realized that you guys did get together in Cartagena for some informal meeting, and I felt like I had just missed something. And it revolved around the chart supplied by GoDaddy about when domains were renewed, and that seemed to be the kind of the crux for determining the number of days for this initial period. And so I guess my point is I wasn't really privy to the discussion about the data to that, and I've got a couple of questions about it if James were willing to respond back to them. And I guess my questions would probably still have bearing with respect to how long this window should be.
Yeah, there was an email I sent out with a brief summary of that meeting, but I think you've captured it in any case. We have Mason's hand up. I don't know since James has to drop off in 1 minute, if we want to give him a chance to respond or not.
Yeah, please, just that I have to drop off the call. Please send your questions to the list. Thanks.
Okay.
Oh, guess
Barry, back to you then.
Okay. Well, I'll just.
You can certainly summarize your comments or questions right now, because I also have some, and there may be others also.
Okay. Let me start off then. So I'm referencing the chart for renewal percentages, and please, anybody pipe in and correct me if I'm wrong in my interpretation. Because, and I guess Alan, I didn't see, or I just overlooked your summary of this discussion in Cartagena. So anyway, what I see here is 6 months worth of data in 2010. And, you know, I definitely am a numbers guy, and I like the percentages behind these. And you know, by first review, you know, there's some good takeaways from this. However, you know, percentages are percentages that are very vague, absent the numbers behind them that make up those percentages. And so, in terms of looking at this chart, I'm making some generalities here, I'm trying to backdoor my way into a number, so there is generalizations made here, and they're not 100% accurate by any stretch, but they are ballpark, and I'm trying to get to this one specific number. So, if I take a look at 6 months' worth of data, that's half of a year, and when I go and review out from webhosting.info that approximately GoDaddy has around 36.4 million domains in registration, if I were to split that in half, or, because there's 6 months is half of a year, that would basically, in ballpark, equate to about 18.2 million domains that would expire in that half of the year. So if I continue to backdoor my way in through the numbers, I've got 18.2 million domains that are supposed to expire. Divide that by 6 months, and I get about 3.03 million domains that expire each month. So now if I consider these percentages here based on this chart, so it says for the month of October, 31.8% of domains were expired on or before the day of expiration. So that equates to about 963,843 domains that were renewed,
not expired.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
The day after expiration is 23.3%, and that equates to about 705,000. 2 to 10 days, 3.9 equals 120,000. 11 to 30 days, 2.27 equals 68,000. 30-plus days is 0.06%. So just for GoDaddy alone, 18,180 domains were renewed greater than 30 days. While that's only 0.06%, it still seems like a significant number that does get renewed. And so when I look at the proposal for the initial grace period of Allinger's being 30 days and the other proposal being only 5 or 7 days, that's a pretty significant gap for still 18,000 domains. So when I roll all of this up, just based off this chart here, that's the potential for 218,000 domains a year that get renewed 30-plus days over. So my point is, if we're going to use this chart or in this data to help try to find our number of days for the window, then I think we need to think about the numbers more. Thank you.
Thank you. Mason, you had your hand up. Do you want to go back in the queue or not?
Not yet.
Okay. I mean, my largest concern, although I acknowledge the numbers and when the numbers are so big, small percentages matter, my largest concern was the fact that there's a huge number of renewals the day after expiration, and that doesn't go along with human nature to some extent. And I was really concerned about the very low number and the apparent no blip at the time that GoDaddy makes the domains go dark or redirects, which I'm not sure which. I think it's either 3 or 5 days. And that seems to be counterintuitive, and I think, we needed to understand that. McKaylee. Barry, you still had your hand, but did you want to get back in, or was that the old hand?
Sorry, I'll take it down.
Okay, McKaylee.
Look, as far as I'm concerned, the statistics that GoDaddy provided, forget the numbers. The percentages are the key. I mean, obviously, if you're dealing with a large volume, then a small percentage equates to a large number. But that still doesn't change the fundamental facts. That, from the statistics that James provided, if people are going to renew, they're going to renew. And they're going to do it either before the expiry, at expiry, or within a day or two of expiry, and after you go past that figure, they just don't renew.
But you're saying the current redirection is not a trigger for people to renew.
It doesn't seem to be. I would have thought it would have been. It actually surprised me, I mean, a bit like you, that it was kind of like, I would have expected to see, you know, the minute stuff starts getting redirected, people going, oh, my God, oh, my God. But then I suppose that's because I was kind of thinking, you know, this is I was applying some level of logic to how people handle these things.
certainly all of the virtually all of the anecdotal cases that we are continually, you know, flooded with, and I think the term is close to that, all seem to be triggered by the website stopped working or the my mail stopped working or something.
But the thing is, Alan, I mean, just to give you one example that we had a client contact us in September. I've just gone back a year or so ago, going, hey, my email has suddenly stopped working. So we looked into it. The domain had expired like 4 months or 5 months previously. I mean, it had ceased to exist. It wasn't a case of it even, you know, somebody else even re-registering the domain or anything like that. The domain ceased to exist. But it took the person like that length of time to realize. And then, so, you know, in those cases...
But those cases, I think everyone acknowledges... fall under the category of tough.
But what I'm trying to say to you is that realistically, look, we're going to go round and round and round in circles about this, and we're going to end up with a total impasse. This entire working group PDP is going to just collapse, implode, whatever way you want to word us. You can try to be upbeat about it or downbeat. I frankly don't care at this stage. Look, we've agreed on certain things after discussing this thing to death. And at this stage now, I'm bored. I dread these phone calls. I dread having us to drag back up topics that we've already discussed at length. You know, there are certain things that I think we as a group can agree on. There are other things that, you know, we could be talking about this now in about 3 or 4 years' time. Or better phrased, you could be talking about it in 3 or 4 years' time, because I will resign from this working group long before then. We can agree that registrants should be given an opportunity to renew their domain names. They should be told in advance about when their domains are due for renewal and how to renew them, and various other things that we've all agreed on at this stage. This entire thing about, you know, rewriting internet protocols, pulling stuff from DNS, traffic shaping, and all sorts of other things that open up a whole range of cans of worms or whatever analogy you want to use. And even for the very, very highly technical, large registrars, they're going to have problems implementing. Forget the small little guys. Forget the resellers of resellers. And basically, it's just going to be a total mess. Can we just move on, agree on certain things that we can agree on, and just bring this to closure? Because to be perfectly honest, Alan, I can't take any more of this.
Okay. Barry?
Thank you, Alan. So I just had one question then. Again, this is probably brought up when I wasn't in the session. Looking at GoDaddy's chart then, at what day do the services go dark? Is it on day 3 when we see a large drop?
I believe it's either 3 or 5, and I can't remember which, and James isn't on the call.
Okay. Thank you. That was my question.
Ron?
Yes, this is Ron Wickersham. Yeah, I fully support McKaylee's admonition to the group that we not undertake complicated technical solutions to a problem that percentage-wise is small. That doesn't mean that I agree that we should not have good policies, though. It's just not these complex fundamental changes, and even if they're possible, the can of worms is as McKaylee pointed out, enormous, and would take years to get resolved and would probably never get resolved. I would like to bring up one other point, though, two other points. One is, I think there's a difference between a registrar such as GoDaddy, who primarily is, if I understand right, and I don't mean to mischaracterize them, so if I do, it's unintentional, but they're primarily a hosting company that supplies domain names as part of the hosting, and that's the customer relationship that they're concerned about. And this doesn't represent the same thing for registrars who are more into pure registration, where
Rob, with all due respect, Ms. McKaylee, I mean, I understand where you're going and what you're trying, and that argument would be valid, except we are the largest registrar in Ireland. We're the largest hosting provider in Ireland. And we see that a very large percentage of Irish registrants who actually host their domains with us would register the domains with GoDaddy and other American registrars. So they're not, it's not a case of, you know, the 40 million odd domain names equate to, I don't know, let's say, for argument's sake, 35 million plus hosting accounts with GoDaddy. Now, obviously, a GoDaddy person would be able to speak better to that than I can, but based on what I'm seeing with our own experience, with our own hosting accounts, with our own clients, a lot of people use GoDaddy just for domain registration and nothing else.
All right. I stand corrected on that. Then I want to bring up one other thing that is technical, but is not a proposal to do technical, but an explanation of why for some people the drop in the root servers does not immediately affect them, because some people put very long time to live on the zone records, especially for stable things like email servers. So you may find 30 days, and I see people around with 90-day. So that those records are kept in the cache of frequent correspondence. So frequent correspondence communication happens even after the root servers are changed. And it's only new people who look up the MX record and get to find that there is none and that the domain has gone dark. But the frequent correspondents are using old cached data. So that's one of the reasons why some of these is longer to take notice than immediately when the root servers are changed. But just a minor point.
Okay, thank you, Ron. I put my own hand up. I have initially one comment, but I'll add a second one now. With regard to the last point that you just made, Ron, I think that's true, but there's not much we can do about it. If people are going to have outrageously long time to lives, then they live with the results, so to semi-make a pun. Even under the best of the worlds, with the implementation of EDDP, registrars have just 45 days with which to renew the domain or drop it, and the RGP time was 30 days. So even that 75 days would not live past the 90-day time to live. So I think you can't save everyone from themselves.
I would agree. My point was just to explain that some people don't get that. I don't support.
Yeah, then that's
a policy. Take that into account.
Then that's a practice that we need. It's a practice we need education on, but I don't think we can fix it with policy. The other comment I was going to make in regards to McKaylee's original comment of rehashing things forever and ever, and I'll simply point out that the proposals 18 and 19 to blacken web service and other non-web services was agreed to by all the registrars on the call on our call of the 16th of November. So this is being reopened, but it's not being reopened. You know, it's being reopened by the registrars who've decided that for whatever reason there are problems with their agreement to that. So I would like to say we don't reopen things that are already addressed, but this isn't one that that I can claim is my problem. Michele.
Yeah, I mean, it just I'm not going to get into an argument with you about that, Alan.
I wasn't trying to argue. It was just a fact.
No. The thing is just with respect to the entire really long TTL thing, I know some people weren't on the Adobe chat, just putting it on the transcript as well. I mean, if you have a TTL that long, then it's technically it's going to cause other issues. And, I mean, I think Mikey might be able to speak to some of the weird setups that some people have on their server, results in him getting weird tweets he wasn't expecting. And whoever owns example.com probably gets a stupid amount of emails that they don't want every single week. I mean, you know, just because something, if somebody insists on implementing something in a technical fashion that's quite broken and causes lots of headaches, there's nothing that the rest of us can do about that.
Other than recognize that it's yet another area where education is needed and probably won't be effective, to be cynical about it. Okay, where are we, people? We seem to be at a complete impasse on this, and I guess I would. I'm going to take to the list the suggestion I made a little while ago, because no one has commented explicitly on that, either to knock it down or support it. And I'm not sure where else we go. Mason?
I was just going to ask if you wouldn't mind repeating what that suggestion was.
Oh, certainly. One of the problems with the original suggestion of exceptions was that exceptions are too difficult to process. It's going to be difficult. It leads to vagueness for many users. So I tried to formulate a policy which was not, as some people have suggested, sort of a Chinese menu of A, B, C, D, or E, but to try to word it in such a way that registrars had a lot of flexibility. And one can argue with the specific numbers, but the suggestion was that the policy say something to the effect of that registrants will have at least 10 days to renew, guaranteed. That notwithstanding, the registrar must provide at least 8 days following the redirection and the going dark. So in other words, a registrar who chooses to give their customer a month or 6 weeks or 5 weeks anyway of continuity without going dark simply says fine. But whenever it does go dark, which is typically prior to either the auction being finalized or the name being deleted, it must there must be a period of time that it can be renewed over that part. So for a registrar that wants to give a month of free time while they try other methods of contacting the registrant, they simply have a longer period of time that they're guaranteeing. And I think that will take out the vast majority of the exceptions. It certainly takes out the case of the Brazilian registrar who says they don't want to disable the website or disable the domain name until the last possible moment, because they want to try to make sure that the system functions while they try other methods of contacting the registrant. So that was the basic intent, to capture the various business practices where it will eventually disappear or go dark, but we're not specifying it must go dark on day three as it had been suggested in the original proposal.
Okay, I'm sorry, Mason, again, I didn't raise my hand, but
yeah,
do you mind if I go ahead?
Yeah.
So let me make sure I understand what you're proposing. So a name expires,
mm-hmm.
and a registrar, by virtue of whatever policy this group puts out or doesn't put out, but according to your idea, there would be either 10 days of free name or the registrar would be obligated to keep the name alive for 8 days following whatever day the name goes dark. Is that right?
Well, I'm not sure that the characteristic of free, because if it gets renewed, ultimately they're being paid.
Well, okay. Well, whatever.
The current practice for most registrars, that is, it gets redirected at some point. Some do it on day one immediately. Some do it on day 3 or 5, and some do it on day 30. And this is simply saying that we are accommodating all of those flavors in this in the policy. So if you do it on day 0, immediately on expiration, then you have to provide 10 days. If you do it on day 32, you have to provide 40 days. Or, again, you know, subject to what the exact numbers are. Yes, that is the proposal.
Okay. And so then, setting aside how the policy would be worded, then what mechanism would there be for a registrar to make the election for whatever path they wanted to follow,
within those guidelines, they don't have to do any election; they just implement, and their registration agreement says what they're planning to do.
Okay, but if it's a result of a PDP of this work group, then it's binding policy, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the policy doesn't have to be specific in terms of a specific number.
A specific number meaning days, or is that what you mean?
Yeah. I mean, the proposal that was originally made said it must go dark on, you know, by day 3. This says
right.
You have several options. You can delete it any time. You know, that's always there today, and that this doesn't change that. If you choose not to delete, you must provide some number of days of window after it goes dark prior to auctioning it or doing something else with it. That's it.
So if one of the options is...
Prior to finalizing the auction, that is.
Right. Okay. So if one of the options is delete it any time after expiration, if I
mm-hmm.
delete on day 2 after expiration, is that valid for your scenario?
Sure. That's something you can do now, and it still would be due, and it would work. It would, of course, drop into RGP for most of the TLDs we're talking about, and that gives
mm-hmm.
the registrant 30 days of dark time. Also, then we're not taking away any registrar rights in this.
Okay, I think I follow you. I'm gonna have to work this out. Okay, all right. I surrender.
All right, I put it in. I'm not sure I put an email. I will certainly put it in an email and try to make it as clear as possible with examples. The only case that is not covered is for a registrar that wants to say, I'm going to renew it, I'm going to go past the 45 days, and I don't care if they haven't paid me, I'm still going to provide service continuity. And I'm told there are such cases because of existing business relationships or whatever.
Okay, I'm going to yield the floor for now.
Okay. Barry.
Thank you, Alan. This is Barry. So I guess to keep the passion alive for what just transpired in this little bit of conversation, in terms of not only documenting it in an email so that we can read it, now, I don't know how one demands something in a working group, but I'm going to demand that an output of any change or recommendation that we try to get consensus on is that there's going to be a corresponding documentation, a.k.a. a picture, that highlights exactly what your exception would be talking about. And the reason why I'm trying to be adamant about this is I will refer back to the diagram that was drawn out by Rob Hall, and whether we all like it or not, or whether it was a self-serving purpose or not, there's been made reference to it several times by the community. And so, you know, we're both recommendations that are on the table now are introducing a new grace period, although it's really just a ARGP of another hat or another color. And then essentially, from what I
perceive on the front end diminishes the need for an understanding of an RGP or an ARGP from a process perspective. So at any rate, in terms of trying to document those exceptions that you're talking about, every time we mention exceptions, it complicates the process, and we owe ourselves and the community the right thing to do by documenting this so that we sure that we're not introducing more unintended consequence by these exceptions.
Ron, I'm not sure what you mean by, or not about Ron, Barry. I'm not.
I'm
confused.
My point is we've got a process diagram today that roughly shows how the expiration world works. That process diagram, again, whether you like it or not, has been referenced to, and if we were to move forward with either proposal, whether it's yours or the registrar's, and whether it's 5 days or 30 days, it's a new grace period, so our documentation should reflect that. Part of that documentation is the new diagram on how this works. And the exceptions that you're proposing, which, I mean, on the surface even kind of sounds like Mason may bite on, we need to be able to document that.
Just to be clear, I haven't proposed any exceptions. I'm saying that we may need an exception policy, which means a registrar can make, after the policy is enacted, the registrar can say, please, sir, may I do something different with whatever process we put around it, but what that is would be up to that registrar. So we're not talking about the content of exceptions in any policy. And whether we need exceptions or not is something we still need to discuss.
Correct.
You know, certainly if we come up with any policy that we're all accepting, we need to document it in as clear a way as possible, yes. I don't think anyone's arguing with that. All right, my screen has just gone dark, unfortunately, so I don't know who has hands up or not. If people can speak out if there are any hands up while I figure out why my screen went dark.
All this talk of going dark, Alan, you've jinxed yourself.
Let me power off and on and hope it comes back. Is there anyone else with a hand up?
Nobody has their hand up at the moment, Alan.
Okay, I have a screen.
Oh.
The gods are not happy with me, apparently. All right, I will put out what I suggested, which may or may not address some of the problems that have been raised here. I ask registrars are known as being perhaps some of the more innovative business people on the globe. To try to come up with alternatives, if the one I'm suggesting is not viable, as to how we can meet the objectives of some of the more vehement users on this group of the need for out-of-band communications with their need for being flexible enough to address their business needs. I'm not sure how else we can address that. Not seeing any hands, can we quickly scroll through this list and see what else is yellow that still needs resolution, which is not involved with the renewal or going dark? Number one is number of days. Five is number of days. Number 15, who is? I think that one we said we want to talk to registries a little bit, but the general feeling is it's a target, but probably not something that we could put a definitive recommendation for in this report. But we should have the conversation with registries prior to making that formal decision. So it's nothing we can discuss at this point. Where else do we have yellow? We had yellow on the registrar's discussion of best practices, and my understanding is that in Cartagena it was not discussed, so it's back in the on the table for some future discussion, but certainly nothing has been taken, no action has been taken to try to institute the concept of a best practice at this point. And the changing of the term auto-renew grace period to something else, we had general agreement, and I think we need some suggestions at this point for names. I'm not sure it's worth wasting time on this call, but I would like to request an email that we come up with some alternatives so that we do not have policies and registration agreements which talk about an auto-renew grace period, an auto-renew period, or an auto-renew practice in ways that are confusing to users. And I think that is all we had. So we were, in fact, almost closure, with the exception of the one item that we spent most of today talking about. I would like to suggest that we adjourn to the list, but let's try to keep the list active, and maybe we'll actually come up with some ideas, or at least if people don't like the ideas that have been put forward, that you try to document what the problems are so we, the innovative ones among us, can try to find a way forward. And I'll remind you, Marika, what is the deadline for comments on the existing part of the report? I think it was the 24th, but I'm not sure.
24th. This is Marika, yes. And, the email I sent on Wednesday of last week, you'll find the latest version of the draft report, including line numbers, and people requested to share common suggestions and or proposed edits with the mailing list, the latest by 24th of January.
Okay, and I would suggest that to the extent we can do it for the 21st, which is the end of next week, we'll be in a better position to discuss it at the meeting of the 25th. Any other comments before we end just a little bit early today? All right, I thank you for your patience and time, and let's try to keep the mailing list alive and see if we can make some progress there.
Alan, Cheryl, going to match the deadline for the list discussion on the yellow marked items to that for the other drafting or not?
I'm sorry, Cheryl, you were slightly garbled and I didn't quite say, are we going to mention the deadline for...
No, match the deadline for the list discussions on the yellow marked items to that same deadline of before the 25th or not?
No, I think the deadline for that is so that we can, in the best of all possible worlds, wrap those up next week at the meeting next week, a week from now. So looking for comments this week, preferably.
So it's preparation, not finalization on list.
Yeah.
Just to understand.
Okay. Thank you all. And there seems to have been a significant discussion going on, which I didn't follow. I will capture it and read it just in case it's relevant. Okay. Thank you all.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, bye, all.